What's up, everyone? Welcome to the pilot episode of Untangling Climate Finance. My name is Jay Tipton, and I lead business development here at Gordian Knot Strategies. In this podcast, we are going to explore climate finance. But what exactly does climate finance mean? Hang tight, because that question will be answered by today's guest. Throughout this series, I'll be talking with industry experts about topics including climate solutions, global carbon markets, carbon projects, novel technologies, AI, distributed ledger, and much more. But before we get into today's episode, I want to address a question that we get asked all the time. Why is your company called Gordian Knot Strategies? Now, some of you may know about the Gordian Knot, but for those of you who don't, allow me to elaborate. The Gordian Knot is a legendary knot from Greek mythology. According to myth, the knot was located in the ancient city of Gordium in modern-day Turkey and was extremely intricate and complex, essentially impossible to untie. The prophecy surrounding the Gordian knot stated that whoever could untie it would become the ruler of all Asia. Many attempted to solve the puzzle of the knot, but all failed. Until Alexander the Great arrived in the city in 333 BCE. Unable to figure out how to untie the knot, he became frustrated, so he drew his sword and sliced clean through it, unraveling it in a single stroke. By cutting the knot, Alexander bypassed the challenge of untying it and fulfilled the prophecy in his own unique way. This event has come to be known as cutting the Gordian knot, and the phrase has become a metaphor for solving a complex problem or overcoming a difficult situation through bold or unconventional means. Today, the climate crisis is humanity's biggest Gordian knot, and this is where our company name draws its inspiration. All right, now that story time is over, let's get into today's episode. To kick off our series, I chatted with the CEO of our company, Sean Penrith. For those of you who work in the climate finance space, you've probably heard of him. He's been in this sector for nearly 20 years, but he'll do a much better job telling his story, so let's jump in. Sean, welcome to the podcast episode. This is the pilot. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Jay.
Before we actually get into the interview questions, I want to quickly share the story of how you and I started working together, because I do think it's kind of coincidental given the fact that we're doing a podcast together right now about climate finance. So if you will allow, I'm going to tell the audience the origin story.
Sure. Go ahead.
So we've been working together for about a year, and when we met, I was actually hosting another podcast that was focused on green jobs around the U.S., and it was called Work Green, Earn Green. In that show, I was going on a bit of a state-by-state journey to look at the regional green job opportunities for workers around the states. And when we built out the production calendar at the beginning of the series, one of the states on our list was Iowa. We obviously decided that the best topic to look at in Iowa was agriculture. And in their research, one of the producers found you so that you and I could have a discussion about soil and the challenges to soil health that have resulted from, you know, generations of intense farming practices, not just in Iowa, but basically all over the world. And what I was also interested in was the ways that soil and ag could be financially incentivized via carbon markets to create green jobs. Prior to our interview, though, carbon pricing was something I was actually very, very interested in learning more about. So I was super looking forward to our convo. And now I've told you this in our conversations probably 100 times, but in that podcast interview, you gave me an absolute smashing masterclass about the voluntary carbon market, carbon credits, decarbonization, and the methods of soil finance. And directly after that interview, I spoke with one of the producers who was on the call, and I said, that guy was a freaking genius and I need to work for him. So fast forward to today, and here we are. And Sean, to be honest, since then, you've given me probably 1,000 more masterclasses on various aspects of climate finance. So it only makes sense that we kick off our new podcast, Untangling Climate Finance, with you. So listeners, Sean Penrith, the CEO of Gordian Knot Strategies, here we are.
Thank you, Jay.
You're welcome. So let's just start in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where in the world you're currently located?
I'll give you the baffling recap, which people where we live right now, and I'll cut to that. We live currently on Malta, but I'll tell you how. So I was born in Zimbabwe, raised in Cape Town, South Africa, moved to South America where I started a business, and then returned to South Africa to enroll in my MBA and started a company that ended up growing to from South Africa to Europe and the US, which is what brought me to the US. And then I sold that business and spent around 20 years on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon, in the US. And when COVID hit, we sold everything, bought a boat, and we were working from the boat, homeschooling. We got two boys and sailing, which is kind of a dream despite the sort of heavy circumstances under which we bought the boat. But it had been a long time passion of ours to go sailing. And then we sold that boat late last year and moved to Europe to find a different boat that we could go sailing in the Med. And of course, where else to look for a boat but in the middle of the Mediterranean, which happens to be a rock called Malta.
And how's it going with the boat? Have you found one?
No, I've been all over Europe looking for a boat. We just can't seem to land the ideal one in the price range with the features, but I'm not giving up.
Yeah, you'll get it. And I'm sure Malta's not a horrible place to be in the meantime.
It's divine.
So, okay, you work in climate finance and I work in climate finance with you, of course, but we're going to for sure have listeners that might not fully understand what that term is. Of course, they know climate change, but what exactly is meant by climate finance?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let me frame the response in this way. So you will recall that under the Paris Agreement signed in or kicked off in 2015 in Paris, France, about 197 countries at that time agreed to limit, to take steps and an effort to limit global warming to below 2 degrees centigrade, and indeed to try and limit it to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which we've recently blown through, unfortunately. But what that meant at the time is that to meet the 1.5 degrees centigrade goal, with a probability of around 50%, we had or have a remaining carbon budget of between 400 and 800 gigatons of CO2 equivalent, carbon dioxide equivalent. And so what we're trying to do is stay within this carbon budget by ensuring that emissions peak before 2030 and then fall to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And so climate finance is the term that we use when we say to finance this transition to net zero, we need climate finance. That's what we're talking about, to get to net zero emissions by 2050.
And so this can mean money that's going towards new technology that might be achieving this, or money that's going towards improving agricultural practices that might reduce greenhouse gas emissions or draw some in. Is that correct?
Yeah, the way to think about it is, you know, you have different sources of climate finance. They can be, you know, multinational banks. They can be state-owned facilities, corporations, investment houses, and so on. They use a variety of instruments, low-cost project debt. They could use project equity, balance sheet financing, grants, program-related investments, all sorts of instruments. And they are allocated according to sort of very broad buckets. The three, what they call uses, is adaptation. So how are we adapting to a climate change? Then there's a very thin sliver, which is dual uses, which I won't go into. And then the large part of it is mitigation. And from those broad three buckets, you then drop into sectors, which are water use, water conservation, infrastructure, industry, land use, land change, transportation, and then systems and energy. So you've got these large sectoral buckets of activity which demand climate finance. And we need, you know, we need to ramp up climate finance by around 590%, which is about $630 billion per year between now and 2030, if we've got a chance of meeting our planetary objectives.
Yeah. So in short summary, a lot of money, lot of finance. Yeah. So good. That was great. I think that that certainly helped kind of set the stage. And so you had said, I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're a CEO, you have a kind of a wide range of background in terms of the businesses that you worked in different industries. And so I'm curious, you know, if you can go a little bit more into your career background and then what was the bridge that somehow brought you over into climate finance?
Yeah, exactly. Let me touch on that. So when I sold the business, I moved to Portland, Oregon, because at the time that was the sort of the beating heart of the green economy. And I took a role in a two-person startup that was involved in energy efficiency and high-performance buildings at the time. And we ended up growing to around 14 states and 50 people under that entity. And I then left and took on a role as the managing director for a software company where we were developing a climate risk software tool, which I can come back to in later on. But that was fascinating to understand how capital was being used and, more importantly, how the risks of climate change were not being factored into the triple bottom line consideration. And at the time, I was a board, I was the vice chair of an outfit called the Climate Trust, which is the country's oldest not-for-profit in the carbon space. And they were looking for an executive director. And so basically, they asked me to step down from my vice chair role and take on the ED role, which I was very thankful for. And it was during the years at the Climate Trust that I really got heavily immersed into the whole world of carbon markets, carbon pricing mechanisms, and related policy initiatives. And while I was there, myself and the team deployed a brand new vehicle, which at the time was really innovative. It's called Climate Trust Capital. It was essentially an impact investment fund focused on voluntary and compliance carbon markets. And it was sort of cutting edge at the time because all of the returns were essentially centered on the commercialization or the sale of the credit. So there was not a real asset play at all. Nobody had really done that before. There was a lot of skepticism as to whether you could command returns from a fund just investing in credits. And as you mentioned, the pricing for credits has been historically and sadly incredibly low. So when we launched, we were targeting around single-digit returns. When I left the Climate Trust, they were on track to double-digit returns. So pretty impressive. Of course, now everybody around the world has got some sort of impact fund that's investing in carbon markets. But I like to believe that what we did at Climate Trust was ahead of the curve. Anyway, we had a second boy come along, and I decided to open up Gordian Knot Strategies as a climate finance consultancy. But the real question is why? Because what I found is that in many situations where I was sitting at tables, there were many occasions in which we were talking about technology or practice change and adoption, social interventions. And it just struck me at the end of every one of those conversations, there was only really one question on the table. Where would we get the money from? Who would pay for it? And I realized there just wasn't a lot of folks at the time, anyway, focusing on untangling that knot. How do we mobilize traditional forms of capital, institutional capital, in a way that actually drives these environmental outcomes? And so that's what we've been doing for the last 5 years, and really, I feel, hopefully, contributing to changing the dialogue around how climate investments can actually give solid, even superior returns. So doing well by doing good.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get more into that shortly, but we're going to go a little personal here because it sounds like your initial foot in the door was kind of a circumstantial thing, but I am curious about your personal investment in working in this space because, you know, my backstory is that I was producing commercials and documentaries in Los Angeles. And then I was on a flight and I watched Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth probably, 8 or 9 years too late. But when I watched that documentary, I was just like, I have to switch what I'm doing. This is crazy. And so, my story, I did that. I switched. I went back to school. I got a master's in environmental protection and because it, on a personal level, just impacted me so much. And I've learned this as I've had conversations with a lot of other people that they have similar stories where they were shaken or shook to kind of this realization and been like, wow, I think I need to switch what I'm doing because we're in hot water here. And so there's kind of a combination of the personal element and then also, this sector is blossoming. But I'm wondering, as a father, as somebody who's worked on other things, is there other kind of motivations for you and a personal reason? Or was it just that you kind of found yourself in a position where you started to work in here where you looking specifically to go to this direction?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I'll tell you a very it is a personal backstory for sure. So I glossed over it, but when I was in South America, I established a business that did very well from a cash point of view, and I was very young at the time, and I had a South American partner. And Latin America being what it is, you have to navigate the system, as it were. And in those days, of course, we didn't have cell phones, so we had an office line. And there was a distinct point, which was sort of my epiphany moment, which was the phone would ring, and I began to increasingly have heart palpitations when the phone call came through, because it was such a a dynamic environment in which we're doing business, where to get things done, it was very much who you knew, who could do a favor for you, and so on. And I realized, like, I was not feeling happy about the way I was earning or contributing, or however you want to frame it. And I decided to do something about it. I mean, that's kind of why I went back to South Africa to do my MBA. I thought, I need the tools to be able to understand how to really contribute in a way that, and I know it sounds cliched, but in a way that when the phone rings, I look forward to answering the call and seeing who I can help. That was the beginning. The second thing is, you know, I grew up in South Africa, which is on one hand, extreme wealth. Well, there's a huge poverty divide between those that have and don't. And one of the biggest things that hit me, especially coming back to South Africa after having been away several years, was just the resource constrained environment that we as a society in South Africa were living in. And that led to us creating this business, which was called Green Glass, which was I would like to say, a very pioneering take on how to repurpose waste glass into very high-end functional tableware, high-end tableware that we sold in Harrods and all over the world, really. And so that sort of set me on the journey of sustainability and material resource conservation. And then it was provenance, because I got offered the job in Portland in the startup. I accepted it because it was in high-performance buildings, green buildings, and I really wanted to get involved to create something that made a difference. Again, yes, luckily, I was offered the position at the Climate Trust. I had been heavily interested in carbon markets, even when I was at the startup and at the software company. And so it's that quote from Rumi, you know, if you begin on the way appears. And that's literally how it happened with me. I was very intent on creating a difference. And in fact, today at Gordian, as you know, Jay, we have three principles when we work with people. Are they nice people to work with, to collaborate? Can we make a difference? And can what we work with them scale? Those are the three guiding principles. And I feel very good about answering phones these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's actually a perfect place for me to ask you more specifically about Gordian Knot Strategy. So why don't you tell me about the firm and the specific areas that you focus on there within the company?
Yeah, I would say, so first of all, let me tell you who we serve. I like to divide the folks that we work with into two buckets, those that have money and those that need money. The people that need money are the people that are actually undertaking innovative, super important innovation on the ground, whether it's a reforestation activity or trying to develop a new carbon methodology, for example, or are trying to create a new instrument in which they can acquire capital but don't quite know how to go about it. So we help design those carbon finance mechanisms in a number of different ways. We'll either develop the full go-to-market strategy and then help them implement that strategy, or we'll do an assessment, or we'll do a state of play to let them understand what the possible pathways are for them to navigate. The other bucket, those that have money, call us and they say, we've got capital, we want to deploy capital, but we want to do it in an optimal way for both returns and impact. How do we go about that? And those entities are TMOs, multinational corporations, impact investment firms, institutional investment firms, endowments, all sorts of folks that have a lot of capital that are trying to make a triple bottom line contribution. And for those, we'll design impact investment strategies. We'll help them assemble their impact investment portfolio, monitor their portfolio. I'm glad to say, out of the host of clients we've had, more than half of us have gone on to retain us on multiple occasions. So we keep getting re-engaged, which is terrific. And so the work that we do up front, whether that's simply strategy brainstorming or developing something, putting it into a framework, we then help them implement it, then we help them execute on it and acquire and invest and so on. So it's very rewarding work. And I would say that in a nutshell, what we do is either the strategy development, the assessment, we acquire tens of millions of credits on behalf of our clients, carbon credits. So that means that we help issue the request for proposals, we do the screening, we help on the due diligence, the contracting, and in some cases help the implementation. Let me stop there because I think that gives you a sense.
Yeah, that's perfect. And what I would like to do now is kind of talk about some of the specific clients, because you had said that you can break them down basically into two camps. Mm. And so can you give me a couple examples? Because I know that your past client list is quite impressive. So maybe talk about some of the clients and specifically maybe some different kinds of climate finance solutions that you've utilized with those clients.
Yeah. Well, let me talk about the first group. American Forest Foundation, which is a not-for-profit, very well known in the US. They approached Gordian about 3.5 years ago, and they were interested in developing what is now known as the Family Forest Carbon Program, but at that time it was really an inkling and an idea. What they wanted to do was appeal to the 60-70% of forested land ownership in the U.S. that was held by small landowners between 50 and 150 acres apiece that had typically been locked out of the carbon market, because you need some sort of economy of scale for a carbon project to make sense. And their original concept for funding this program was essentially to approach philanthropy. And, you know, while I think philanthropy has a super prominent place to play, especially when it comes to the catalytic or helping demonstrate feasibility, it is not a replicable or scalable financing mechanism. And so when they first spoke to us, I just said, well, I don't think that's going to work. And they said, well, what will work? And that commenced the engagement with Gordian. And they were like, okay, well, you help us solve this intractable problem.
Yeah.
And that culminated last year in them issuing the first ever green bond that was backed by the sale of verified carbon credits to multinational corporations through forward offtake agreements. And that had been the green bond sort of trail has been my quest, if you will, for the last decade. I find it amazingly appealing that you've got a low-cost debt instrument that offers patient capital if you can arrange or marshal the resources in a way in your favor. Because if you think about it, the bond market is massive.
Yeah.
People are interested in investing in bonds for solid, stable returns. And if we can tap into that, we've got a real spigot of capital. Anyway, so the issuance of the green bond under the American Forest Foundation program, the Family Forest Carbon Program, was like a huge first. And I was happy to work with the team on issuing that. And I think it's going to pave the way for others. In fact, you know, we're talking to other clients now who do want to do exactly that same thing, just on a much larger scale. Another client is an endowment, and I'll just leave their name at that. But anyway, this particular endowment, fairly large assets under management, really wanted to understand what the opportunity space was for impact investing. So we designed, we did a landscape assessment, then we designed an impact investing strategy for them. Then they engaged us and they said, here's X number of million dollars, quite a lot. Can you help us put this to work? So we're currently engaged in that right now, which is really, really interesting. Another client is American Forests, AF, not to be confused with AFF. And I mention them because they have another very interesting program, which is Reforest America. And they wanted to figure out how they could arrange or develop a mechanism by which they could fund reforestation efforts using carbon markets. And very quickly, it is difficult to do that because you have to wait for a tree to grow before you can verify that there's a carbon credit there. And the challenge is for reforestation, you need the money today, not in 15 years.
Right.
And so working with that team and with one of the larger carbon credit standards, we integrated what is now known as the projected carbon unit from Verra, which is essentially a proxy unit to sell a carbon, a sort of an IOU for the carbon mitigation that's coming in the future, but allows you to transact it today, get paid today, and turn that IOU into a verified credit later down the line. So that was really innovative. I really enjoyed working on that. And the last one I'll say is a very large, another interesting engagement, a multinational mining company that has very ambitious goals to reach carbon neutrality goals. We are helping them not only procure high quality, high integrity credits, but also develop a design and develop a program in which carbon projects can be developed on their natural assets that they own to largely benefit the communities in those regions. So a lot of social uplift aspect, along with creating a carbon portfolio that they own specifically, and then of course appealing to the carbon market. I'll stop there, Jay, because there's a couple of other instruments that I can talk about.
No, that was great. I think that gave us a nice breadth of what you've worked on and clients in various different aspects that you've been able to help. You know, my next question I think is about anybody who pays attention to this space, climate finance, voluntary carbon markets, compliance markets, is noticing that things are moving very quick, especially in the last couple of years. There always seems to be new groups or countries or companies that are facilitating or implementing new regulations for carbon, or there's some partnership that's going to create a bond that's going to go to fund certain projects or certain restoration activities. And so you and I are always sharing updates with each other. And sometimes it almost feels like a race. Like literally even this morning, I registered for a Silvera webinar. And then a minute later, you forwarded me the update and said, hey, check this out. And so we're paying attention. But I'm curious how you are staying up to date with all of this fast moving information that's coming through and the latest developments and advancements that kind of encompass climate finance. What are your go-to methods to stay very in the now? Because you always know what's going on, and I always find it pretty impressive.
I actually only, I don't have a whiz-bang secret to share. I only have two instruments by which I keep up to date. The one is very pedestrian. About 7 years ago, I think it was when Google first came out with their alert system, which you're familiar with. I set an alert for climate finance, and over the years have tweaked that a little bit to get exactly what I want. But as a result, I get an email digest every single morning with elements that news, updates, releases, and so on that relate to climate finance. And I read ferociously through everything. So that has been, and what I've liked about that, of course, I mean, you and I, we subscribe to, you know, quantum intelligence and we read Carbon Pulse and all that. What I like about the Google Alert is it's so wide and expansive. In other words, it takes me into other sectors and areas of thinking that are not within our immediate network. So I find a lot of value in that. And then the second, of course, is I have a very active LinkedIn network. And I spend a lot of time reading what the people that I admire most or that I follow, what they're reading and what they're following. And so I ingest a tremendous amount of information there too. So those are really the two areas that I learn the most from.
Yeah, so it's a combination of heavy ingestion, but also the discipline to actually read the links and open up the emails, because I know that sometimes I get in the habit if I'm having too many daily emails coming through that I automatically delete them. So it is a bit of like discipline, but you kind of gave me an idea as you were speaking that I think for the listeners, I am going to throw into the show notes a couple of the links of resources that we use that I find super valuable that maybe some of our listeners might also gain some value from. So for those of you who are listening, I'm definitely going to throw some stuff in the show notes. So keep an eye there. And then my last question for you, Sean, because we're running out of time, but when we're looking towards the future and we're thinking about climate finance evolving, which it is, I'm curious what you see as interesting technologies that are emerging or various financial mechanisms either or initiatives that are coming from governments or coalitions that particularly excite you. So what do you see that's coming down the pipeline that has got your attention?
Yeah, I think there's three areas there. I'll begin with the first one. I don't know whether to say it's exciting that it's coming down the highway. I'm going to point this out as a pressing need. And that is we in the climate solutions space writ large struggle to access mainstream capital for one reason only, and that is because of perceived risk, which is understandable. And so for us to successfully mobilize more traditional streams of capital where, you know, the bulk of the $96 trillion that's swirling around the globe is sitting really needs assurance. And one way that the current markets, the traditional markets do that, of course, is they use something which we term credit enhancement, sort of some sort of guarantee underwriting, whatever term you want to use. And we don't have that. It's very difficult for us to take the green bond example. If you issue a green bond, you have to have some sort of coverage so that the bond buyer knows if things don't work out as they should, that at least their principal is protected or some principal and a portion of their coupon or their interest is protected. Otherwise, they're not going to buy it because they're trying to buy something that's safe and solid, just like any other investor.
Right.
The investors that are willing to take the risk, which are your typical equity type investors, many times climate solutions do not offer the types of IRR, the internal rates of return that an equity investor needs. So we've got to look at a different way. And that different way is there is lower cost capital provided we can crack the code on credit enhancement. So to me, when I look at how do we blow up climate finance in a way that really mainstreams climate investments as a superior investment solution, would be we need to be able to mobilize credit enhancement much more effectively. And if you think about it, USAID, which operates internationally, routinely underwrites or enhances certain financial mechanisms in countries outside of the US. But we do not have a US equivalent of anything like USAID internally. And we should, because if you imagine if we had a national credit enhancement facility that our clients could tap into, pay a premium for the access to that, and then be able to issue debt that is labeled favorably, we would be succeeding at mobilizing climate finance. So that's one piece that I want to land on. The second is technology, obviously, it's on everyone's mind, is how can we use advanced AI to speed up the decision-making when it comes to investing in climate solutions and being able to take the appropriate decisions based on either a risk or an opportunity in that space. Because the one thing, and you know this from working with our clients, we're talking about we need to mobilize capital at both scale and speed, and we're not moving fast enough. And so technology and AI or open AI and those types of things offer tremendous excitement to me specifically so that we can address the need for speed. So that's really important. And then I would say the other thing that I find really interesting is the whole realm of fintech. Of course, I've followed blockchain, distributed ledger, and so on. But the idea that we can start to create tokenization in a way that allows people to invest in natural climate solutions or even land assets by investing in a token to protect that asset or to allow the development of a conservation project on it is extremely exciting to me. So I would say those are the things that I'm watching that offer a lot of potential. And to that end, I'll close and just say we're building a climate risk and investment management platform called Encretea. We're doing it with a group of folks called DECO that come out of the computing world. And we're building Encretea specifically to leverage the types of things I was talking about. How do we make it a lot easier for impact investors to identify viable investment opportunities? How do we enable them to monitor their investments so that they can make the appropriate C-suite decisions based on the opportunity and risks that the platform surfaces? Of course, using semantic models, predictive analytics, and and AI. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that to me is very exciting to culminate all of this pressing need in a technology platform like Enquetera.
Well, that was great. And I am going to explore each of those in coming episodes. So I'm looking forward to having conversations with other people that are working in our space that are touching one or two or maybe some group of the things that you just mentioned. I think that there's a lot of room to have bigger discussions, bigger conversations, and work with other thought leaders about these types of things. So that was awesome. Thank you very much for giving me your time, and big thanks for being the first guest of our new podcast. So I appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you, Jay.
All right. And that wraps up our first episode. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. I'll be back again next month with another episode. And if you want to connect, you can shoot me an email at jtipton@gordianknotstrategies.com. A link to my email address is in the show notes. Also, Sean and I talked about a few key resources that help keep us up to speed on everything happening in the climate finance space. You can find those resources in the show notes as well. And finally, please be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on all major streaming platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and basically the rest. You can also check out the podcast at GordianKnotStrategies.com. Adios.